You can find Level Up Podcast on lulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter at lulpodcast. You can also subscribe to LUL Podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and TuneIn Radio. Level Up Language Podcast is sponsored by Davis School District and Clearfield High School. Welcome to Level Up. A few weeks ago, we began discussing advanced opportunities and focused on international baccalaureate. This week, we will discuss advanced placement and concurrent enrollment. Think about how you prepare your students for these opportunities as we get in to Level Up. So to start today, we'll take a look at the Advanced Placement Test. And the Advanced Placement World Language Test is broken up into a few different sections. There are a few different ways you can look at it. There is a multiple choice section and a free response section. The multiple choice section comes first. It is made up of interpretive communication using just print texts, such as articles, blogs, etc., that students can read and interpret and answer multiple choice questions about, followed by interpretive communication with print and audio texts combined. And there they'll have a variety of types of print text and audio that they can listen to, or that they will listen to and answer questions about. And then they have interpretive communication with just audio texts.
Are they answering those in English?
No. Everything is in the language.
In the target language there?
Yeah.
So what's the average time for that then?
All right.
Because I've never done AP. So the AP section is something that's, I mean, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
But there are aspects that are new to me, yeah.
Yeah, so the interpretive or multiple choice section, for the first part, the print texts, students answer 30 questions and have approximately 40 minutes. The way it all works out is the students will walk in, there will be a counselor or whoever's in charge of kind of proctoring the exam for world language. At least here in our district, we use our language labs as much as possible because it makes the recording just that much easier. And so our district supervisor typically comes here and runs the language lab for this, for our Spanish AP test. And AP will send cassette tapes or CDs, whatever is going to work best for you. They'll send those. You have to break them open in the moment. When the kids are there, they have their packets. They've filled out their information. And then you take the CD, the appropriate CD, and you put it in to the player. And that keeps all of the time. So even the time where nothing is being said and it's just literally waiting out the clock for the students to perform their tasks. All of that is built into the CD. So that's kind of cool. Once you start the CD, that just tells you everything to do. You don't have to worry about anything else. So the students go in, the CD will tell them to open their books, to get going, and they'll have, roughly 40 minutes to answer their 30 questions. So on just their print texts, there are, well, and by the way, I'm using Vista Higher Learning's AP Spanish Language and Culture Exam Preparation Book. I'm a big fan of it. I think it mirrors very, very closely the way the AP exam runs. And we've had great success with it. So
should point out really fast that German has been hard to find.
German's been really hard to find.
We've been to a conference or two together where we looked and they didn't have it. In fact, this guy, I think, wasn't he at one, the Vista representative, yeah. And he said they didn't make it in German.
Right.
But he gave me just a book in general about ACT prepping or something like that, language tests. But we did find some materials at the ACTFL conference. So I can, that's probably something I can put on the website for this episode and say any German teachers out there, it has been hard to find it. And I haven't even administered it myself yet. So this is new to me, but anyway.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a good point because, yeah, German resources seem to be really hard to come by.
A little trickier.
And maybe I went to an AP session at ACTFL, and the people running that session were German teachers. So I might have some resources that I can throw up there too.
Awesome.
Okay. So for the print text section of the AP test, students will answer 5 questions that come from an advertisement, 7 questions that come from a literary text, 11 questions from an article and chart, and 7 questions from a letter. So in this Vista Higher Learning book, it gives all kinds of strategies and things for students to do to prepare themselves for that, which we work on throughout the year, but roughly 40 minutes to answer those 30 questions. They then move on to the print and audio texts combined. Students will answer 4 questions on an article, 4 questions on the audio, and then there are 2 questions that are related to both. And that's where we've got some great info from Ken Stewart.
Well, let me just ask you again, because since I'm unfamiliar with it a little bit, you talked about the print section, the print-only section, where they just have an article and they had 30 questions. That was more multiple choice.
Yeah.
And then this part where they have 4 questions on the article, 4 questions on the related on the related audio, and then 2 questions on a combined thing. Are these more short answer, or is it still?
Still multiple choice.
Still multiple choice. Okay.
Yeah.
Just not as many questions as before.
And on those audios, do they listen to them twice?
Yes. Every audio that a student will hear on the AP test will be played twice. From the print and audio texts combined, students then transition into just multiple choice questions on audio texts. And between the two, print and audio combined and audio, they'll have approximately 55 minutes to answer 35 questions. And then, as we mentioned, in the audio texts, where that's all they're listening to, they will also get to hear that 2 times as they answer questions.
Yeah, as they can, if I remember, because I helped administer it for Spanish last year at Syracuse High School, which was my first time helping to administer it. And yeah, I remember them, as they were listening to it, they were going through asking questions and that, or answering, not asking questions,
yeah.
Answering questions. What are some of the things you do in class to help prepare your students for that? Or those first sections?
So, yeah. For what I'm finding more and more is the more serious we get with and about IPAs, like, that's a format that just, it translates over to everything. It really does. The more full IPA, we have the benefit of having been to ACTFL and David and I being trained very thoroughly by Bonnie Dare Houck and Francis Troyan. And then being able to bring that information back here. And the more I've worked with the reading comprehension component, the more I see that really builds those kids' skills. And we're seeing with our stamp results right now, as my levels 4 and up are just finishing up their stamp test, reading scores are just super high. Really, really doing a great job, all kids. I've started, when we do our practice AP tests, every student gets this same book that I'm using here, and I give them a clear plastic sheet so they can mark up the page, and then a dry erase marker so that they can mark the heck out of the page all they want. And really, I think it begins at the lower levels. I work with my 3s all the time about, just put a line through the words that you don't understand. Cause if we don't understand them right now, that's fine. We don't want to get hung up on them. And, have them underline the cognates, for example, and then just kind of piece things together in their mind as they go. And so the more specific practice they get with reading and reading skills at an earlier stage, the better prepared they'll be for the latter stages, where they can do those things a lot quicker. And I'm a big fan of the IPA to improve reading, their ability to do those things. Also, the listening, with my higher level classes, we've listened to a lot of news, had them answer questions, things like that. I rotate it each term. So first term, I want them to read at home for 30 minutes a week. Second term, I want them to listen. So I say watch Netflix in Spanish with Spanish subtitles, or listen to music, Spanish music, obviously. Whatever listening they want to do outside. And I feel like that's made an improvement. Our stamp scores on listening are also much higher than they've been in the past. Still not where we want them to be, but vastly improved over previous years. So that's been really good.
I'd like to insert with that, when we went to the actual training, one thing that Bonnie, one of the trainers there from the University of Pittsburgh, she said that with her own children, just when they're brushing their teeth or even small stuff, she just turned French on in the background. Like, it was just always on, listening to whether it's music or news or whatever. It was just the pure listening of the language that greatly influenced their vocabulary, their accent, understanding, the comprehension. She said it was just about the listening, just to get them to listen to whatever. And they might not understand a lot. They won't understand a lot in the beginning, but eventually it will come. And I think that goes the same with reading. Just read.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of interesting in my master's program. I can't cite the specific study, but I do remember reading about a study where it just showed how if you're watching something, so obviously you're going to be hearing the language, but when subtitles are on in the target language, comprehension comes much better than not having any subtitles or having the subtitles in English, which would seem to be obvious, but
yeah.
I just thought that was pretty interesting that hearing it and seeing it is just going to help it solidify even more. So that is a very, very brief description of the multiple choice section of the AP World Language Test. All right, so with that, we'll move on to Brandon talking to us a little bit about the first part of the free response section, which is the email reply.
Sure. Okay, so I had to, as I mentioned, I've never given this test for German kids. That's new to us. We don't have an AP German class here right now. We did have one student independently go to his counselor and request to order it and take it.
did you get results on that?
So, and I never saw the results. I probably should go ask.
Yeah, let's ask.
I asked the student. I saw him later for something. He has siblings that still go here. And he said he couldn't remember what he got. So I'm guessing a 2 or a 3 is all he got. And I'm not even sure, but
I remember being pretty impressed. He looked pretty confident and comfortable in there. That was awesome.
If anyone can do it without much preparation, because I didn't train him the AP way, but anyway, he could have done it. So I should still go figure that out. But in any case, I've done some research here and Roger can kind of confirm that this is correct. But so we just talked about the first section of the test, the first of two segments, and the first segment was the multiple choice. Now the free response, which is broken into a few pieces, and the email reply is the first piece. It is a formal email that the students see, and I'm just using an example of a German one from the German test that was a couple years ago. And this was an email from a woman who's the chairperson of the Nature Protection League of Hanover, Germany. So she talks about some opportunities they have for students to come work there in the summer. She talks about some programs they have going on that they can be involved with. She asks them about their interest in nature and environmental protection. Notes in her email that it would be helpful if the student filled out an application. They don't have to actually fill out the application as part of the email thing, but I think just to provide something for the students to ask questions about. So a student has on the AP language and culture exam for all the languages on the email reply, they have 15 minutes to read that email and to respond. The response should be formal. In this case, all the answers were like distinguished chairman, whatever, or whatever her position was. So you are writing it formal. And Roger helped point this out to me, but one thing that he's learned in his experience is to be sure to answer all of the questions directed to them in the email that they read, and they need to ask for further information. That's kind of an important piece that really puts you into the possible 5 range.
Right.
Right.
I mean, they can ask at any point. I've started instructing my students to maybe do that first, because it's really easy to forget once you going. So like have your greeting, which even the greeting and the
closing,
conclusion. The greeting and the closing, they said, you know, if you just copy basically the same kind of wording that they use in theirs, distinguished, or I think that was the one that, mm-hmm. that you had in yours. So then you don't have to spend too much time teaching them this and that. But I'm encouraging my kids now to get their greeting and a little bit of a lead in, and in that part, ask for the further details or instructions before they really get going with
the response. What does that do to the flow of things though? Okay. How much do they weigh on like flow of paragraphs and art and ideas from one to the?
I just think of it as like I could start off by saying, oh, you know, thank you for your email. I'm just curious about this one detail. Could you explain more about this in response to your questions? I don't know.
I guess it depends on where you fit it in there. I just would wonder how it, like if flow is that.
Your strategy though is just to help them, and that's what the AP graders care about, is just that they have every piece in there.
Yeah.
Right. So you're asking.
Get in the ballpark of a five. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you at least give yourself a chance.
But yeah, no, I get what Miles is saying. Sometimes when you're doing tests like this, there are a few tricks of the trade. You got to kind of teach them to, that they don't get hung up on little things, so they can focus on the main message. And so anyway, they have 15 minutes to read and respond to this email formally. You want to be sure that they address every part of it, ask for additional information, and also have a complete cohesive email response with a greeting, the body of your email, and the closing of it. So,
right.
But anyway, that's the email reply, and that's the first part of free response. And after that, they go on to the persuasive essay, which is Miles' area of expertise today.
I didn't know I had one of those, but the persuasive essay. This is the longer of the two tasks. This one, I believe, they've got 55 minutes. And with the persuasive essay, they're going to write a persuasive essay in the target language. The topic is based on three different sources. They present different viewpoints on the topic and includes both print and audio materials. It gives them 6 minutes to read the essay topic. For example,
is plastic surgery a solution for the problem of low self-esteem?
Okay, so that's the topic. So then
it's heavy.
The resources that they're going to get are going to be all about that, different viewpoints on that particular question or topic. After the 6 minutes where they have time to read the essay on that topic, they're going to hear an audio material two times. I think Roger had mentioned, and that's a question I asked him to see if it was the same for everything. Any audio in French or Spanish or German, any audio in the target language, they'll hear two times. They'll take notes while they're listening. Then they'll have a total of 40 minutes to write the essay, to prepare it and write.
6 minutes to read the print source.
Oh, for the audio?
Up to 9 minutes for the audio, because it'll be anywhere from close to 3 to 3.5 minutes or so.
Math part.
And then the 40 minutes, yeah.
So the audio twice, they'll take notes, and then they'll have 40 minutes to prepare and write the essay. Now, the writing itself... 40 minutes is a long time, and you don't want to write an essay for the entire 40 minutes. So, something I've worked on in my classes, really from level one up, is take your time and try to organize your thoughts and make a wee little outline and start writing. In the persuasive essay, you need to present viewpoints from the different articles, the different material, the print and audio. You need to clearly indicate your own viewpoint and defend it, thoroughly defend it. And use information from all of the sources to be more likely to get that five. Need to make sure to reference something from all of the sources, whether it's for or against what your opinion is, what your viewpoint is. And don't forget to identify those. So those are some things that, as far as directions to help your students as you're getting, so they know kind of the format. You can practice that in your classrooms with your students. Your students can practice that on their own. Now the sources... there'll be a printed source, like an article, a literary text that presents a really clear opinion on the topic. The opinion generally is going to be different from that of the audio. The audio itself is going to have a different opinion from the reading, basically the same thing. I just said it a second way. and then the second part of stimulus is going to be a map with text on it. It could be a chart, could be a table, that presents information on the topic. That particular source in and of itself doesn't have to present an opinion. It's just there to give you data that you can use to either support or maybe to use as a counter argument and then the third one, as mentioned, was an audio source, like an interview, a report, an announcement. Could be, a reporter interviewing someone on the street. Could be, a news report. Could be on the radio. Any form of audio that also presents a clear opinion, which is going to be different again from the printed source, from the written source. Now, as a strategy that I think most people I've spoken with will give is as soon as they get the topic, as soon as they see it, what was the topic again, Roger?
Is
plastic surgery
a good solution for
good
poor
solution
self-esteem?
For poor self-esteem.
Right. Yeah. Is plastic surgery a good solution for poor self-esteem? As soon as you read that, you need to form an opinion in your brain. Basically decide yes or no. And then, as you, the student, and as a teacher, you instruct them on this. As you start to read the essay and the printed material, you've got your opinion, you've got your idea all in your head. So you're just kind of skimming through that to find things that support your opinion or to support your either saying yes or saying no to that particular topic. So you're not reading the article word for word. If you're going to do that, you're going to lose time. And when it comes to the audio, you're doing the same thing. You're listening for things that support or, in this case, are potentially against what you want to say. So you can throw those in there as a counter argument to throw back or push back down. Or how do you say that? To put down? To squash? To run through the mud? Basically, you need to pick your opinion to begin with based on the topic. And as you read, skim through. And as you listen to the audio, just listen for the things that either support or go against that you can easily put back down to be more persuasive in the end. Those are some of the hints there for that.
Thank you, Miles. Let's move on to the second to last portion, which is the first of two speaking tasks, the simulated conversation. For that, we'll go over to Davin.
So the simulated conversation is the second to last portion. And it's a pretty short portion of the assessments. What happens is the student will be given a scenario, a prompt, and they're even given a guide as to how the conversation will flow. So they'll see what the recording will say and a rough general outline of how they respond or how they talk. And they'll have about a minute to look over the conversation outline, to look over what the prompt is, and that's pretty much the only prep that they have. They don't write anything down. Should be everything off the top of their head, unrehearsed type of conversation. And it's kind of the model that we've adapted for our simulated conversations in our IPA, just due to technology concerns that we can't do an official interpersonal task. We've turned it into more of an AP simulated conversation. The students will hear part of the audio, there'll be some type of tone or beep, and the students will have 20 seconds to respond and talk. And they are instructed to talk and use that 20 seconds as fully as possible. They hear a beep again, and then the recording will give some sort of response or question, and then it goes like that. Generally, I think, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, from what I've seen, most of these type of simulated conversations only last maybe 2 to 4 minutes. Is that right? Or do they vary?
They only have one scenario and five total opportunities to speak for 20 seconds each. They generally last less than 3 minutes.
Yeah. Most of them I've seen I've seen some that are just over three. So that's why I say about 2 to 4 minutes, some of the samples that they have out there. And that's just to see what the students do on the spot with what they hear within a certain context or certain scenario. And we've tried to mimic that in the district as much as we can. Any listening practice that you can do helps, but clearly output is going to be the key factor. That's the main thing that's graded, but they do have to understand what's being said to them to some degree. But getting that output out, especially in 20 seconds, sometimes the question might be something pretty simple, but it's up to the student to really take advantage of that opportunity. And that's a skill that I think the AP test is really searching for is who's really extending. And that's what we're looking for with our IP assessments as well. That, in a nutshell, is the simulated conversation. Is there anything else you guys want to add to that?
Just one thing. I was going through with my AP student today, kind of going through some of the rubrics, not official rubrics, but things they need to try to do. And the word appropriate kept coming up when it comes to speaking. So depending on how appropriately the questions are answered, not appropriate as in inappropriate jokes, that sort of thing.
But fits the what but they're
exactly.
supposed to do.
Now, right. Sorry, I'm trying to say at level three, at score three is where it starts to be appropriate. I mean, does it say super appropriate? You know, fits all the time. But at level three and up, a score three and up, it starts to be more appropriate. And five would be obviously you're answering all of the questions appropriately. It's just something in my head that you may not answer all of them appropriately as far as what was asked, but you're still answering them and you're giving some information that may or may not be.
So can we think of appropriately as more directly, indirectly, whereas maybe, so if you score a three, you're talking around it and you're answering it, but it's
maybe not specifically coming right out.
Right. Whereas a five, it's going to be very like specific within a certain range, within a very specific range of that question. Like you answered it. It's part of the conversation. There's not a lot of.
Yeah. And that's still
extra things that really don't have anything to do with what's going on.
It's still a minor part. I mean, obviously they'll look at syntax and usage and all that and
right, clearly.
Making sure your point gets across. But, just are you answering the questions? Because if you're scoring a one or two, chances are you're probably not answering the questions. You're still speaking, just not necessarily answering them in any appropriate way.
Yeah, I was just going to mention, it came up today, I got an email from a teacher regarding our mid-year IPA, just talking about how kind of awkward the simulated conversation is. And I agree, it's not natural. And that's part of the reason that I kind of like having it as part of our IPA. Partly, I think it's just kind of what we can do at this point, as much as we would like to transition to a genuine interpersonal speaking. But part of it is, I mean, yeah, if we can prep kids from level one all the way up to handle simulated conversations, you know, hopefully when they get to AP, it'll just be like, okay, this again. And I was talking about that with some of my AP students today and asking them what they think about the simulated conversation. And they just said, well, I've never really viewed it as an authentic task. I said, that's interesting. Tell me why. He's like, it's a test. He said, they're trying to see what my ability is with the language. So it may not be all that authentic or genuine. But that's okay. I can still address the prompt. I can still do all those things as closely as possible to if it were an authentic situation. So I just thought that was kind of cool on his part that we've never spoken about it like that as a class before at all. I just thought it was kind of a cool approach on his part.
Give him an A, no matter what.
Let's see.
It's nice when
he's already passed the AP test last year.
Oh, really?
So he's just trying to pass it with a higher score this year.
Really?
Yeah.
Very cool.
So the cultural comparison is the final portion of the AP test. Funny, quick story. My first year here, the students were just at the point of having their voices recorded when the computer controlling the language lab did an auto update. So they had been in that room for about 3 hours, maybe more. Computer did an auto update. And so the proctors had to contact College Board and tell them what was going on. And the students had to redo the entire second portion a different day.
No.
I felt so bad. Anyway, the cultural comparison, students receive a prompt and have 4 minutes to prepare what they want to talk about and then 2 minutes to deliver that presentation. So, for example, just looking at a sample out of the book here, the question, and I'm translating from Spanish to English, what is the role of grandparents in the day-to-day life of contemporary families, and how has it changed over the last few decades? So that is the prompt, and then they've got some instructions. It says, compare your observations about the communities in which you have lived with your observations of a, in this case, Spanish-speaking region of the world that is familiar to you. And that was an interesting aspect for me as I went through the Davis AP Summer Institute, was that they pointed out it's a Spanish-speaking part of the world that's familiar to you. So they said it doesn't have to be like this really quote-unquote authentic place in Spain or Argentina or Bolivia or whatever. I said that can be a Spanish-speaking community that exists here in Utah or in California or in Florida or wherever. So just a region of the world where the target language is spoken. And then it says in your presentation, you can refer to what you've studied, lived, observed, etc. So it really is pretty wide open to the students. And there they want to make comparisons. So in this instance, it's talking about how the role of grandparents has changed over the last few decades. So I don't know, does anybody have anything that comes to mind within our culture here, your culture, that you can see where the role of grandparents has changed?
Well, before we jump in with that, I'm going through some of those rubric things with my AP student today. There was a special note. Sure. There was a note, indicating what it meant by community. And it indicated that community could be an entire nation. It could be a city. It could even be something as small as a family.
Right.
Knowing what a community is, I think, for the students will be helpful. It could be, like I said, as small as a family or as large as the nation.
Right.
An easy way to compare. I don't know, like, the change part of it, but more and more, and I don't know when this started, more and more are being put in nursing homes or old folks' homes, whatever you want to call it. I don't know what's correct these days.
Care centers.
Convalescent.
And there's different levels of care centers. There's some older folk that are, I mean, my dad's 80, whatever, 81, 82 now, 81, 81. And he gets around better than I do. He does more work than I do. I'm just a lazy old poop.
Your dad's 81?
Yeah. But then there's different, that's how, what I would address is what do we do? I don't know when that started.
Yeah.
I think it's mostly within my generation, our generations, I guess.
Well, that's family based too.
It's, right?
Yeah.
Because my family, for example, we're all very independent and we're raised that way. And my grandparents were more hands off and we didn't have a very close bond with them. Whereas my wife's family, she grew up with her grandparents and they did everything. Now her parents are taking care of them and we'll probably take care of her parents. But on my side of the family, my parents would do the care center because that's what that side of the family does.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a comparison to make and then.
Yeah. So that's going back to you. Well, within the family, if you're talking about a family community, well, even within my own family, I've got two separate communities as to how those roles of grandparents evolve and change is interesting.
I think it's important to point out, it would seem, again, not being a experienced AP teacher, but there's a lot of cultural things you need to be discussing along the way through their years in your class.
Right.
Right? Like I don't think I've ever, we've talked about family in German a lot. You know, that comes up in a couple of the levels, but, well, actually in all of them really, but, I don't know that I've ever asked that question and talked about that. So what are your suggestions on making sure you've covered a lot of cultural comparisons to preparing for this part of the test?
I think it comes back to using authentic resources as much as possible. Cause just the same as like the vocabulary that they're going to see on an AP test, you can never predict what exactly they're going to run into. There's always going to be something new and it's quite possible that they'll run into something that we haven't covered in class and they'll just have to go off of whatever their own individual experiences and knowledge on the topic are.
Some of it might be a skill. Or, I mean, all of it is a skill where as we have our kids read and as we do the authentic and expose them to a lot of authentic resources, there's a skill of not stereotyping, also not assuming like, oh, that's weird or strange, but it's teaching students to think, why would they say it that way? I'll give you an example. We did a reading in my level one and we're talking about school right now, and one of the readings, this elementary, or no, this teenager is talking about school and daily school stuff, and is talking about their school rules. And she said it's not permitted to smoke inside of the school. And student, I didn't ever taught the words to students, the word fumar, which is to smoke. And so I explained, like, well, that's what that word means. And so they all looked at it and they're like, well, yeah, duh. You can't smoke inside school. I said, no. It's like, in the United States, we have a law that if you're under 19, you can't legally smoke cigarettes. That does not exist in every country. And so they have to explicitly say you can't smoke within the school. I have to make that specific rule because some places you can smoke if you're under the age of 19. That's totally legal. And so teaching them to think, instead of thinking like, well, yeah, that's obvious, you can't smoke. No, you got to think outside of United States, out of your own community, your own culture. Why would they say you can't smoke inside of school? If it's obvious to us, there must be a reason why they made a specific rule there. Right. Either it was a problem, or maybe because their laws are different, and you get them to practice the skill of going outside of their own shell to think about it. Because like you said, Roger, they're not going to know the vocab when they get there, or they most likely won't. There's so many words to know. I've looked at some of the AP stuff, and I don't know a lot of the words as an advanced speaker. But it's teaching them the skill of why would they say it that way, and to get that thought process of thinking outside the box is like really
on your
what's
feet too. You know, having to think on your feet too a little bit.
Yeah, on the spot.
That's a good way.
Right.
Makes sense.
In some ways, I actually had that same thought today after my mixed class, my 3-4 AP IB year two class. Is I in my head I've failed my student in that I haven't given them enough culture. In some instances, like you were saying, Davin, you don't necessarily come right out and say, this is the culture. But based on that bombardment of authentic resources, some of them may catch on to some of them. You have to point out some here or there, like with the smoking rule or law.
We'll take the opportunities where they are.
But if you don't, then hopefully by being bombarded so much with pictures and audio and all these different things, that maybe they'll just be able to make some assumptions based on what they've seen or heard, if that makes sense.
It's a hard thing too. Sometimes I have a hard time when we say we need to teach culture. Well, the language is the culture, and there's a lot of the culture is already embedded in what they're reading and listening to and practicing. They don't say in Spanish, "I am 16 years old. I have 16 years." If you want to directly translate it, right? There's a lot of culture already written into a lot of these things. It's just taking these opportunities to show the students that that's what it is. It's not that you necessarily have to have, it's like, hey, we're going to have a quinceañera day. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but sometimes I have a hard time with, we have to specifically teach culture. It's like, well, culture is everything, and the language is definitely a major component within culture.
Yeah.
So we're already doing that. It's taking the opportunity to help the students recognize what it is.
Tip of the day, tip of the day, tip of the day.
All right, so one really good tip I got from Ken Stewart. I believe he's retired now, but he was a Spanish teacher in North Carolina. He also works very closely. I'm not sure of his position exactly with the College Board, but he helps design and score the AP test, and he came out and gave us some training. And he's got just a ton of really, really good tips. So if you can book him to come give you a training, you'll want to do that. But one thing that I really liked that he mentioned on the cultural comparison is, so oftentimes students run out of time and haven't even made a comparison with the target culture. So he says a few things. He says, make comparisons very clear. Start with the target culture. He says, don't refer to, well, here we do this and there they do that. You don't want to refer to it as that. I guess really it would probably be.
In my head, I'm thinking of stuff like those cohesive devices, like in Madrid, yada, yada, yada. Whereas.
Yeah, or
when I was a young lad,
in my Spanish speaking friend's family,
or when I was a young lass.
So we shouldn't even say like we and they,
right?
I catch myself doing that all the time, and I know it's not right.
Yeah.
I just never it just comes out. It's like, oh, we say it this way, they say it that way, and it right. does separate.
And,
yeah, the connotation of it is bad.
Yeah,
and I catch myself all the time. I do it all the time naturally.
So that actually
change it.
It wouldn't hurt in your class to ask the students, like, how could we refer to that target culture? I guess it depends on the prompt and which culture or family or whatever is going to come to their mind. But it might not be a bad idea to think of some general ways of addressing the target culture that you want to talk about. It also says the information that you provide about the target language speaking community must be accurate. Now, you don't want to just make up details. Like sometimes on our prompts and things for some of our other levels, we'll say, lie to me. Like, tell me a story. I don't care if it's true. Like, we're doing a unit on relationships right now. Say, tell me about this horrible date you've been on. Maybe they haven't had a date that they consider to be horrible. Like, well, make one up. What would be a horrible one? Make it about somebody else. Like, we don't care if it's necessarily true. Here, we do. We absolutely want the information presented to be as accurate as possible. We don't want them just making stuff up. At this point, it's about more than just spitting out language. Now I see more of my notes. He also says, don't overgeneralize. So like, to make it appear as though all people of this culture or this area do this or that. He also recommends providing more depth than breadth. So if you only make one comparison, that's perfectly fine, as opposed to making a bunch of superficial comparisons and going back and forth.
And 2 minutes is
going
to go by fast anyway.
It's going
to
go by really fast.
But it'd be helpful to have your students just to practice talking for 2 minutes.
Yeah.
It was really, and I did a recent test with a speaking test in a group of three, and I gave them 6 minutes, and not all of them, but some of them were surprised when the 6 minutes was up because they were speaking for more or less the whole time. So, time does go by pretty fast. They think, oh, 2 minutes, that's forever.
And that's where I think the IB individual oral is really, really good prep for that as well. That is very much in a nutshell.
That's a big nutshell.
It is. And there's so much more we could get into, rubrics, how the things are scored, all kinds of things like that. But we will wrap up this portion of the AP test and move on to concurrent enrollment as we currently understand it. This is our first year offering concurrent enrollment at Clearfield High for languages, at least. But it is a great opportunity for students to receive college credit. Here they can take concurrent enrollment classes in their language year 2, year 3, and year 4, which equates to language 10-10, 10-20, and 20-10.
In high school.
In high school.
They have to be in high school to do it.
So we'll start off, we'll get right back to Miles, talking about the types of things each level should be able to do, the types of topics to cover.
And I've just got syllabus. I've just got a syllabi. It's the plural, right?
Yep.
I've got some syllabi here that I just used from Weber State University for my classes, just modified theirs. So I'm going off the topics. And 10-10... for example, which is at the novice level, which is, do I throw them under the bus? Which is interesting because that's where we want our level one students to be, but this is level two students for us, so they've got some.
Yeah, it's an interesting
kind of a mix there.
I
so they should
call
be okay.
It a disconnect, but.
But some of the topics, I don't want to read through every single one, but, for the level one, which would be, for French 10-10, which would be enough our, my French 2 class. Greetings, some stuff about school, like classroom, subjects, times and places, family, ages, descriptions of people, that also goes with friends, ages, descriptions of them, dates, being able to give the date and talk about dates, birthdays, and, weekly schedules or routines, you know, what do you do on Saturdays or Mondays or, leisure activities and sports. It has a few other things in here. Making sure they know about the 24-hour time system, some things about clothes and colors.
Did you say they should know about the 24-hour time system?
It's on here.
Didn't we get butchered on that on the IPA?
Yeah. One of our strongest criticisms was the 24-hour military kind of time.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Yeah, which is shocking because most...
Everybody uses it.
Yeah,
I don't even call it military time. In my class, it's always the rest of the world time.
United States would generally say military time because that's how we know it.
Right, but...
But everybody else is normal time.
Exactly.
It's the regular cultural time.
Almost everybody else in the entire world uses this other time. Americans, we're just kind of crazy sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
You're counting the time through a day. Why do you stop in the middle and start back over? Why don't you just keep counting until it's over? Does it make sense? Anyway.
Right.
24-hour time. They need to know about that. That's, and then, so moving on to 10:20, which would be the equivalent of French 3 or Spanish 3, whatever it may be. All of the topics from French 10:10 plus getting into foods, eating at restaurants, going out, shopping, life in the city, where do people live, life in the country, some nature stuff and geography, personal relationships, religious and official holidays, expressing feelings and emotion, weather and seasons, and moving on again now to 2010, which would be the equivalent of our French or Spanish 4. All of the topics previously discovered, but now also travel, getting around, lodging and visiting places, being a tourist, health and well-being, environment, community and politics, cinema, internet, music and art. Now, my understanding is they're not going to have like achievement type tests where they go through and, all right, how many words do you know about cinema and how many words do you know about family and descriptions? So it's not like they have to do every one of these to the T. If you generally cover some of these, my understanding is the students are going to be okay. And that's, again, as Roger said at the beginning, that's a current concurrent enrollment as we currently know it. And based on our interactions with Weber State University, I would say we're fairly accurate on that, assumption.
We'll find out.
We shall soon find out as we're getting close to the end of the school year.
We already brushed on it a little bit right at the very beginning, but the proficiency expectations, German, French, Spanish, 10:10, which for us is our level 2. The concurrent enrollment proficiency expectation is a novice mid, which for us in our district at level 2, the expectation is novice high to intermediate low. And then for language 10:20, it is novice high, which equates to our level 3. Which our proficiency expectation is intermediate low to intermediate mid. And then language 2010, which equates to our level 4, the proficiency expectation is an intermediate low, where our district expectation is intermediate mid. So it's kind of interesting, and we've had all kinds of discussion and debate about how that all works out with our classes and things, but we will continue to learn more is really all I can say about that. I don't know. So Brandon, talk to us a little bit, because I think we've all kind of had some students at this point of the year kind of hitting the panic button a little bit. Like,
yeah.
Am I going to be ready for the test? And like, well, let's explain to you what exactly.
And that's
does
a traditional
happen.
Education thing. That's
right.
Really, that's what that is. Am I ready for the test? Because that's what we've trained kids to think. That's what education is. So.
Yeah.
So this is the perfect example. Just happened to me yesterday. Bonnie Flint sent me an email and said, "Hey, I got this email from a parent who must be confused about CE and AP." And then I just stopped by in our principal's office today, and he said, "Hey, I just got an email from this parent who's really worried about their child taking the AP test at the end of CE." And I was like, it was the same parent. So I talked with a student in class today, and somehow, I guarantee you I never said this, but somehow she got the impression that at the end of CE, a Weber State representative would be here to administer the AP test to them. So, first clarification, has nothing to do with AP. Absolutely nothing to do with AP. And there's no test, and there, you know, I mean, CE is really just a win-win-win situation in my mind. Weber State gets kids credits early, which encourages them to come to their college later when they graduate. The kids themselves benefit from having credits that they can get for you know, cents on the actual dollar if they were to go take it at the university. And then we as teachers who have to recruit kids to our programs, to me, I think that college credit is one of the biggest persuaders of students and how they're motivated. So the program itself makes sense for all parties, in my opinion. What they have to do though is make the class equivalent to what they would take on campus to keep the integrity of the system. So I think that's kind of where we run into a little bit of the proficiency expectations problem, because we don't have the same amount of time in class or they don't have the same amount of time we do and things like that. I don't know if that's the whole answer, but anyway, so there's a few glitches, but, for the most part, we're running independently of Weber State. There's just a few checkpoints that they make with us to make sure to keep us honest and to keep the integrity of the program, like I was talking about, and make sure, you know, at the very beginning of the year, we have to agree to teach what they're going to be teaching in those classes on campus. And we have to agree to keep them at the level that they expect at the end, which for us is no problem, like we talked about. I mean, it's at or below our own district standards. So anyway, there's no CE assessment framework that kind of comes around us that we have to fit in. They just have a few checkpoints to make sure we're teaching the same things and that we have a way to show that we're holding these kids to the same proficiency standard. So that's the way that I understand it. They do have like another checkpoint they have is in the middle or later in the year. Some of us have already had visits from our, do you call them a coordinator or something, or just a CE contact from Weber State? That's
supervisor.
Yeah, there you go. Probably, the language supervisor will come out to the high schools and just kind of take a little sample of the class. That's another measurement that they take, you know, interview a few kids, ask them how they're doing, what's going on, observe us teaching a little bit, take some kids out into the hall. The kids aren't graded on it at all. They just, it's for Weber State's records to be able to say, we are keeping the high school programs honest here and keeping the integrity of the system intact. And that's pretty much the extent of the contact we have and the students have with Weber State. And all the testing and everything is just what they would do in our class normally.
Yeah, and I just jump in. When you said they don't get scored, they really don't get scored from Weber State, but Weber State will verify with us, the teacher, to say, this is where I would peg them. I think they're a novice high for these reasons. What do you think? And then,
yeah.
Or maybe they'll ask us, I don't know for sure, they'll ask us what we think, and then we'll see if it matches them, just to see that what, you know, our scores are matching, and then whatever, like you said, whatever we give them, whatever tests we give them, whatever grades they get, that's what they get.
Yeah.
Yeah, Professor Tom Matthews just came to visit Davin and I 2 weeks ago, and he introduced himself to the kids all in the language, and they got to enjoy just getting to meet him and know a little bit about him. And then he opened it up to some questions, and someone asked him about that at the end of the year when he'll come, and can't remember how they worded it, something about like how he's going to evaluate that individual. And he said, oh no, don't worry. He said, this is not so much about evaluating you as it is evaluating Senor Burt to see that his class is being run like a college level class.
And you said the same in mine. He's like, I'm going to have a conversation with you to see if he's doing okay.
Yeah.
That's really what it was.
Which is the way it should be. So that is a very, as Brandon referred to it off air, a Swiss cheese approach. There is a whole lot more that we could get into at some point. If you have any questions or comments or anything like that, please feel free to contact, the podcast via Twitter, email on the site, etc. Whatever you do, please continue to build your students towards these types of skills and abilities. So with that, I'll say hasta luego.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Adios.
A plus.
Thanks for getting down with Level Up.